Hello and welcome to Coach in Your Corner, powered by Last 20 Sports Conditioning. The goal of this podcast is to show you everything you need to know about sports conditioning. We'll be talking with current players, current coaches, physios, nutrition specialists, and anyone that can help you to become the athlete that you want to be. This week, I'm speaking to Tom Holm, who's the founder of Blokes, a company that provides men with a safe, supportive, and non-judgmental platform to open up about their mental health, connect with others, and tell a hashtag male tale.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks, mate. How are things with you?
Yeah, not bad. I've been getting back into some more work outside, a little bit of event work even, so it looks like things are starting to come back to normal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so nice to actually see, like we were just saying before we came on, like, just so nice to see sort of, like, people at Wembley and, like, you know, you and I going to Twickenham on Friday, you know, it's so nice that you've actually got these physical events to look forward to. I mean, like, you know, like I said, I think they've been the biggest things that I've missed. So yeah, it's nice to be able to actually to plan rather than worrying about how many people are in your kind of bubble.
Yeah, it's nice these restrictions are lifted. I was seeing people out in town last night, actually in restaurants and things, and that social aspect is going to start to come back, which is what we've all needed for quite a while. It's going to help a lot of people, I think, getting back out, even if it's sport, just that confidence of getting back out again and knowing they can get back to normal things. So yeah, I just wanted to get you on this week, really, because it's obviously last week was Mental Health Awareness Week. I thought it'd be perfect timing to get you in just after it, so we could sort of dive into some of the stuff that you've looked into last week and learned over the past week. So before we get into it, I don't know if you want us to give us a quick background on yourself and on Blokes.
Yeah, definitely. So my kind of first experiences with mental health, well, I say my first experience, but my eye-opening moment with mental health came in November 2016. I'd just started my second year at Northumbria Uni. At the time, very typical sort of first going into second year student, going out with friends, seeing family, very sociable person, was playing a lot of rugby for uni. And in the space of sort of 3 or 4 weeks, I went from being that person to then actually trying to take my own life. And it was only really when I did attempt to do that, that I realised that I couldn't kind of go on as I was and that something wasn't right. And I think the first kind of port of call for me was reaching out to my parents and sort of saying, look, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why I'm feeling like this, but I just know something's not right in me. So, you know, as kind of most people who experience mental health problems will know, kind of first kind of stop for me was being taken to the GP, who then prescribed me antidepressants and referred me for sort of NHS counselling and therapy. But I suppose my personal experience at that time was, because I'd gone from being this really outgoing, sociable person to then being prescribed antidepressants and referred for all this therapy and counselling, that I had a real lack of understanding about. I think I didn't really engage with the therapy and counselling in particular, just because it's quite overwhelming how quickly it all happened. And to be honest, my experiences in terms of knowledge wise about mental health before that, I hadn't educated myself on it. I didn't know about it. I didn't really have that many friends who would outwardly express that they were suffering from mental health problems. I mean, my mum kind of suffered depression when I was probably about 12 to 14. But again, I was kind of so impressionable and young that I never really took the time to understand it. I always just viewed it as, oh, she's just really, really sad, which I think a lot of naive people probably tend to think sums depression up. But anyway, leading back to kind of where I was at this stage, obviously, as I say, I didn't engage with the therapy and the counselling, but kind of the one thing that I did get the benefit out of was just normalising conversations about how I was feeling with my friends and family, and more importantly, my male friends. You know, not feeling obliged to say, yeah, I'm all right, when actually I couldn't be further from all right. And, you know, I think that kind of first gave me an insight into the importance of speaking openly and honestly. And I you know, kind of 18 months passed and I had my ups and downs and finished uni, graduated in sort of June, July 2018. And I knew that I wanted to do something around men's mental health, but I think we've just, you know, the stresses and pressures of trying to get a job and trying to get on the property market, I think I it kind of got pushed to the side a little bit. And then obviously the pandemic hit sort of March time last year. And yeah, I think that kind of, as it did with everybody, it gave me all this extra time to sort of sit down and think about, well, what I wanted to do, but more importantly, how it would look, and more importantly, what it would achieve, what it would look to kind of serve as a purpose. And that's when Blokes was kind of born in June last year. And essentially it kind of has two different arms, Blokes. I suppose the main arm that it was originally created for was to provide men with a safe space online to talk about their thoughts and feelings. And, you know, so for example, men who are age 16 and over can create a free Blokes account, and they can join our we've got an Everyman forum, which, as the name would suggest, is for men from all walks of life to join a kind of a community of like-minded people who are all sort of sharing tips, advice, stories, experiences. I like to avoid saying it's like an informal space, but it is more of like a relaxed, experience-led kind of platform. So rather than somebody saying, you know, oh, you need to go to therapy, you need to try CBT, you need to try mindfulness, you need to, you know, oh, you're on the wrong antidepressants, why not try this? You know, ultimately, no one who's on there is a quote-unquote mental health professional, but we're all men who have either experienced mental health problems ourselves or have been affected by it, whether that be friends or family or colleagues or whoever it may be. So that's kind of one arm of Blokes. And the other is, so we're partnered with a lot of kind of grassroots sports clubs and mental health conscious organizations who we work to support with free mental health workshops, signposting sessions, seminars, resources. So that could be something as simple as a poster for a changing room or a poster for a clubhouse. And obviously, I think, you know, because we've kind of been operating throughout the pandemic, we've not been able to kind of host those in-person sessions and workshops. Obviously, now that we're starting to move towards a bit more of normality, that hopefully will be something that we can look to do.
Yeah, so really been following it since it started. I started the page similar sort of time as you guys, and it's been really great to see it grow and see the amount of people that have come on board with it from all walks of sport, all walks of life. And every now and again, you see that shared post on a story that it's okay, the mail tail and the hashtags. It's been really great to see that push in awareness for it. I think you're right. It wasn't until lockdown myself that I really started exploring mental health properly. Mm-hmm. And because I had more time to just sit in my own thoughts, and you're sort of sat there thinking, like, all of these extra things come up that usually you push aside with work or with life and what's going on. Mm-hmm. Or even you can unload it to your friends down the rugby clubhouse or whatever, but you just sat there with these thoughts. And it's something that definitely, yeah, I became a lot more aware of and really started to look into understanding it and seeing how that could help daily life, but also sporting life. Did you find your mental health affected your sporting life, your enjoyment of it and your performance?
Yeah, I've obviously had a couple of years to kind of reflect in terms of how my mental health did affect my sporting experience, let's say. I think, so one part of my mental health struggle has been with body image. And I think, you know, especially playing rugby where, you know, although yes, rugby is a game for everybody, obviously, you know, if you're playing to a decent standard, you know, you need to be of a certain stature or a certain ability for your position. And being someone who played in the front row, I always was very bad at kind of comparing myself to other people in my position, because I mean, I'm somebody who likes to take care of myself, but I wouldn't say I'm sort of somebody you'd find in the gym 5 days a week for 3 hours a day, you know. I mean, I like to go to the gym, but it's more because I like, you know, I like the feeling, you know, the endorphins, and like the feeling of exercise rather than, you know, trying to smash a 200 kilo deadlift, you know, because that's just not, it's not me, it's not what I'm interested in, it's not what makes me happy. Whereas obviously I think, so I went, as I say, I went to Northumbria, and obviously kind of around the time I was in the rugby setup, they'd just kind of broken into this new kind of newly formed Buck Super League. So obviously it's kind of like the best at the time. I think it was like eight rugby unis in the country, or in the UK even. So yeah, I think, you know, I was never the strongest. I was never the biggest, the most muscly, you know, I think I always, it kind of led me to these feelings of being a bit ashamed and a bit embarrassed and a bit guilty that I, you know, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, you're not, you know, you can't bench press like 100, 120 kilos. You know, you're sitting on like 60, 70 kilos, you know, clearly that means you're not as good as that person, you know, or, you know, why do you even bother trying, you know, because clearly you're never going to be like that person. And I think, you know, I think that had a huge effect on me because, as I say, I kind of always felt like I was a bit inadequate. And I suppose in a way it almost made me quite paranoid of always losing my spot, because I think rugby in particular had been something that I played since a really young kid, like got introduced to it like 7-8 years old. And it kind of, no matter what had been going on through my life, whether it was sort of changing schools or, you know, exams or whatever it may be, you know, rugby was always a constant for me. So I always knew that, you know, I'll come Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday or Sunday. It was, you know, that was my rugby time. That's my time to escape and do something that I really enjoyed. But I think it became a bit unhealthy when I began to think that rugby and my ability to play rugby defined me rather than, you know, and it kind of, it just added this kind of like unnecessary pressure on myself. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think, and then as I said, you know, I think when I actually did kind of have my first mental health breakdown, you know, and it was to the point where I wasn't leaving the house, I wasn't leaving my room, obviously I stopped playing. But also I think a big thing for me was, so as I said, I kind of played rugby at uni through my first year and then retrialed between my first and second year, and I got dropped in my second year, which, by the way, as I say to anybody, was absolutely no one else's fault but myself. You know, I don't blame anybody. There's no sour grapes or anything. At the end of the day, I hadn't trained over the summer because I was so busy overthinking things. And yeah, I just wasn't up to where I needed to be. And ultimately, you know, if you don't put the work in, you don't get the results. So got dropped. And I think that for me actually was a bit of a trigger because it kind of validated all these feelings of worthlessness and ashamed, feeling being ashamed and like embarrassment. And yeah, so I kind of say it all kind of went hand in hand.
Do you think team culture can play a big part in that? Because it's something similar I've experienced, and that anxiety of just turning up to training in case you do make a mistake or in case you're not up to standard. I think having the right team culture around can be a huge part to helping people not have that. Obviously, like you see a lot of the time at grassroots sports, like someone drops a ball or someone makes a wrong pass and everyone starts getting angry at each other and shouting at each other. I actually had Matt Jess on last week, and we were discussing something similar. And it's just, it's almost, you need to speak to people how you'd like to be spoken to. And I think that's a huge part of that team culture that can actually, if everyone starts doing it, it can relieve a lot of anxiety from other players because you feel confident, you start trusting your other teammates. So even if you are making little mistakes, even if you're not feeling like you're up to standard, actually, your teammates are still just giving you that little reminder every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, I even remember from a really young age, like always these, you know, your coaches at minis and juniors would always be like, you know, if somebody drops a ball or makes a mistake, you know, don't get on their back, you know, pick them up and say, you know, it's all right, mate, you know, let's go again sort of thing. So, yeah, I definitely think team culture has a big part to play because ultimately, if your rugby team, let's say, is an environment where you feel if you make the smallest of mistakes, you're going to get 14 other blokes on your back telling you how bad you are and how on earth did you make that mistake, you know, that was such an easy catch or that was such a simple pass. Obviously it's going to create this anxiety to make mistakes and almost create that perception of needing to be perfect and obviously needing to, you know, because ultimately, as cliche as it sounds, you know, we all learn from our mistakes. You know, some people need to make the mistake to learn from the mistake, you know, so whether that be, you know, something as simple as in a backs move, you know, maybe throwing a miss pass when you didn't need to throw a miss pass, you know, you'll know for next time not to throw the same pass. But, you know, with like Jesse, he's one of our ambassadors, and we kind of had a mental health signposting workshop last week. And he was saying that, you know, there was a big kind of topic that came up about dressing room culture in particular. And it is almost that, I suppose, slightly more off the pitch, it's that concept of, when does banter go a bit too far? you know, because I think, like you said, you know, treat others how you would like to be treated, or speak to others how you would like to be spoken to. And I definitely think rugby, you know, rugby is a game that is so fantastic for so many different things. You know, I love rugby because it's given me so much in my life. It's given me opportunity. It's provided me with chances to meet people who I probably wouldn't have met otherwise. It's given me the chance to travel the world and go and play around the world. You know, but I think also it does have this darker side, especially when you sort of begin to look at uni rugby in particular, you know, whether it be from, you know, horrendous stories that you hear about initiations, or whether it kind of be the reputation that the uni rugby team has around the campus. You know, I think there is this real kind of issue of toxic masculinity and, you know, alpha male culture that unfortunately goes hand in hand with rugby. And, you know, I think, you know, that those kind of, I suppose, expectations and stereotypes of rugby art can be quite damaging.
I like how you've got all these ambassadors at the moment from the sport, these sort of role models of sport. And I think they're really important to helping the message. As I see with last week, when you start seeing these players that you're watching on TV on Saturdays and you're following their careers, when they start speaking out about these things, I think that's a big moment for a lot of other people, that they can actually go, oh, well, if the really tough British and Irish Lions player can also feel the same way I'm doing, then it is all right for me to speak up. How important has that process of been getting ambassadors in and just the help that they've provided, like you were saying with Matt in the seminars last week?
Honestly, there is absolutely no way that we would have A, reached as many people, or B, where we are today without our ambassadors. Because I look now, and even from a fan's perspective, you know, someone like Tom Lindsay or Matt Jess or Dan Mugford, Nick Williams, Sinotti, whoever it may be, I watched them from, you know, from my teenage years up to the age I am now. And you know, they're not only are they fantastic rugby players, but they're fantastic advocates for the game and everything that's good about the game. And, you know, to, like you say, to hear these sorts of people who you hold in such high esteem actually saying, do you know what? Yeah, I suffer sometimes. I doubt myself sometimes. I feel anxious sometimes. I worry sometimes. I think, I don't want to say it humanizes them, because obviously they are, but I think, especially when you're such a big fan, you kind of see them on this, and which they are, obviously, no doubt, you know, they're on this kind of elite pedestal. But when you actually strip it back and you just, rather than talking to like Tom Lindsay, the rugby player, and you talk to Tom Lindsay, the guy, you know, he's just, and I know I'm using Tom as an example, but all our ambassadors from any sport, you know, they are just such genuinely good people who actually care about other people. You know, look at like any time there's any charity challenge or anything going on, Matt Jess is the first person to put his hand up and do it. You know, whether that, I mean, back in November, running 10K every day in November, like the commitment and the discipline that you have to do that is absolutely bonkers, you know. And he ended up raising like £1,000 for blokes back in November. And that's like, again, like without him taking the time to do that, making the effort to do that, and like there's not a chance that we'd be able to do what we do. And you know, even if these guys are just using their platforms just to actually not just share our message, but share the general message about the importance of people talking about their mental health, that it's massive, it's absolutely huge. And you know, like I still find it incredible, and I know it sounds a bit like boastful, but it's not in any sense of the word, that I can pick up my phone and I can type in Tom, you know, like Tom Lindsay or Matt Chess or whoever's number into my phone and just chat with them on WhatsApp. And you know, we've had chats in the past about maybe one of us hasn't been feeling particularly good at the time, and we could just chat to each other. And you know, the amount of times I've said to like Jesse, I'm feeling pretty crap at the moment, mate. And within 2 minutes, he's FaceTimed me. Like, if you strip everything back, they're just such good, genuine people. And I honestly feel genuinely blessed that we've got the guys on board that we do, because, I mean, they've made such a huge difference, not just to blokes, but to me personally. Like, they've genuinely inspired me and motivated me to to grow blokes, to progress and you know, to kind of to help more people, really.
Yeah, I think you've created a really good, we were saying earlier, this sort of community aspect and creating that right culture. Like, even you were saying back at uni, you were seen as Tom the person. You wanted to be seen as Tom the person, not the rugby player. And mm-hmm. and you, it's the same with the Premiership players. At the end of the day, it is Matt Jess, the person who played rugby and who does rugby. And once we can start taking these labels off that sort of that elite level of a sport and it becoming more of a professional game starts adding, you realise it is the same as your local club, that community spirit you've got, but it's just on a wider scale. And it's something that I think can get lost with the professional game and with all the money that flies at the big TV deals. We forget that actually mm-hmm. it's a load of blokes, load of women, load of kids that want to go out and play rugby on a Tuesday, Thursday night and want to play a bit of rugby on a Saturday. And you can start creating that culture, and once that culture and community is there, then people can start speaking to each other and helping each other from it. And I really like the broadness of guys. You've got guys from all sports as well, haven't you, rather than it's not just rugby. So these role models are really going to help the younger generation to get that education early on, so it becomes a normal thing and not just something you suddenly have to deal with at 25, 26 years old.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, you know, but we definitely kind of are more top heavy on the kind of rugby ambassador side of things. And I think, you know, that is because not only because all the guys are absolutely fantastic, and I'm, as I say, couldn't be more grateful they're involved, but I think also because of my passion for rugby in particular, naturally I was drawn to wanting to get these guys on board. But, you know, as you said, we've got Joe Hughes, who's kind of he's a former, let me see if I can get this right, European light welterweight champion boxer. Lyndon James plays for sort of Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club. James Sutcliffe, who's a personal trainer up at the Matt Hampson Foundation at the Get Busy Living Centre. And more, you know, literally announced yesterday, Ryan Yates, who's a footballer for Forest. And being a Forest fan myself, that is absolutely incredible, like huge. That's massive. So, yeah, you know, it really does mean a lot to have a huge, like a range of guys from so many different sporting backgrounds. And I think as well, the nice thing is that obviously within those different sports, there are obviously different cultures and different opinions and attitudes towards mental health. And they're all experts within that. And they kind of bring that knowledge and expertise together, which, you know, I think it does help us to appeal to more people. Because obviously I think ultimately one thing that I wanted to provide with blokes is just providing men with more, like another option in terms of managing, you know, their mental well-being, because obviously there are loads of fantastic support services, both with the NHS and obviously the likes of like Samaritans and Calm and Young Minds and Shout and all these different, as I say, fantastic services. But obviously for me, it's all about providing, as I say, more options for men, because again, some men may be like me and just want to normalise the conversation, whereas others may want to seek more of kind of a clinical professional route.
Yeah, I think everyone has their different experience, isn't it? And if you can build a big team around yourself, so not just blokes, but if personally you can build a good team around you of different support networks that you can rely on experiences and things, then we're going to become a lot stronger and a lot achieve those goals a lot quicker. And that really comes from talking more, doesn't it? Like, we've got to be able to go out and talk to these people and sometimes get vulnerable if we need to, and actually allow them to help us. I think that's one of the biggest parts I found, that I just wouldn't accept the help. You're seen as the strong pillar that wants to get on with stuff. Maybe if things start going downhill, you don't want to start taking medication because you feel like then someone's going to judge you for that. But actually, if you can just talk about it and start that conversation, it doesn't need to be with close people. Sometimes it might be a random stranger on a bench that just allows you to get that weight off the shoulders. I think that's been a big part of your hashtag that I really have liked and been trying to push on Instagram as well, sort of the male tale, and actually asking twice is one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
Every single person, when you ask them if they're all right, just naturally says yeah or all right, or there's just an instant computerized response that comes out and they don't even think about it. So I found that asking twice a huge thing, because you just, if you really just stop and go, no, actually, people will suddenly go, oh, I can actually just say yes or no now. And maybe they're not ready and they'll just say I'm fine again, but it at least opens that door to starting conversation.
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially with that whole element of you know, actually, how are you being the most important question you can actually ask somebody in a conversation. It's, you know, that was obviously something that was said by Roman Kemp in his Our Silent Emergency documentary, you know, a couple of months ago now. But you're completely right. You know, I think we're so, it's such an automatic response if somebody says, how are you, to actually, you know, sometimes you don't even answer, you just go, you know, just like, oh, yeah, how are you? Like, you know, it's like, well, I still don't know how you are, you know, but the problem is, I think, and this is something I think really needs to be addressed in terms of people's perceptions of mental health, is if I was to say to you, or if I was to say to you, how are you? Well, not necessarily me, but if somebody was to say to somebody else, how are you? And someone goes, you know what, actually, no, I'm not particularly well. I've not had a good week. I'm feeling a bit down, or I'm feeling a bit anxious. I think people, as soon as they get any other response rather than, yeah, I'm all right, how are you, kind of put this barrier up because they don't feel that they're qualified to talk about mental health, or they don't think they're the right person to advise on a certain person's situation. I think we need to get out the habit of the words mental health being something that's seen as such a, obviously we know it's a taboo, but we need to get out the habit of thinking that when mental and health are together, that it's this huge, overwhelming topic, you know, because, you know, it really doesn't need to be. And I think even if somebody goes, yeah, I'm not particularly well, I've had a bit of a crap week, like I said, actually just saying, oh, come on, mate, let's go and grab a beer, or let's go for a walk, or let's go and grab a coffee and have a chat. That could be the conversation that actually makes a real difference to someone. And I just think we need to be more, people in general need to be kind of more open to the concept of actually having a discussion around the question, how are you, rather than it just being something that kickstarts another conversation. So yeah, I think that I definitely think, you know, that whole kind of concept of a male tale is something that we want to try and really kind of promote and push, because obviously the whole kind of idea behind a male tale is, I suppose in a way we kind of think that it's a nicer way to kind of, it's a less intense way, let's say, to try and, you know, rather than saying, oh, let's talk about your mental health. You know, if you are, let's just tell a male tale, mate. You know, it's kind of that more softer approach into a conversation.
Yeah, I think you're dead right with people not knowing how to help, or not knowing if they're saying the right thing. But 9 times out of 10, people just need someone to listen rather than advise. Actually, just sitting there and just listening. You don't have to say everything's all right. You don't have to try and provide advice to do it. Just allowing them to lift that weight off their shoulders and know someone's in their corner that can support if needed is usually the biggest thing, because we keep so much to ourselves. You think we're really connected with social media, but you think, especially in lockdown, the only people that have probably seen you are maybe some work colleagues 8 hours a day. They don't see what happens in every other hour of the day, and we think that we're a lot more connected than we are, but people don't see these sides. So if we can offload it onto someone and know that support's there, then suddenly, well, there's a really good phrase from last week's podcast from Sarah, and she said it just stops that snowball effect. If you can ask that question early enough, and someone offloads it, then they don't overthink it for the next three weeks, whatever it is. It just stops anything going on from that, and then we don't need to be looking at it as a big subject because it doesn't get to that point.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely one thing that has helped me in terms of, if somebody says, are you okay, and I'm not okay, and actually being honest about that, is, so my kind of main struggle is with anxiety. And I think my anxiety is very quick to, like Sarah said, my anxiety is very quick to snowball. It's very quick to get out of control and, you know, go from one thing to another. But for me, if I actually vocalize and talk out, you know, speak aloud what my anxiety is, where it might have come from, what might have triggered it, with someone else who doesn't, you know, it could be my dad, it could be my partner, it could be my friends, who none of them are mental health professionals, you know, but they can, rather than advising, they almost help me to kind of break it down and rationalize it a little bit more, which for me is always really, really helpful. And it's sometimes, like you say, it's just needing to get another perspective on your situation, because I think I tend to have quite I'm trying to find the right word, but my anxieties are really kind of like peculiar, strange anxieties. And yeah, I think sometimes when you actually say it out loud, even to somebody else, you can even say to yourself, like, no, you know, that definitely hasn't or won't happen, you know? So yeah, I think sometimes it can actually help just to get, like you said, get it off your chest. And, you know, not that I want to disclose an individual or a name, but we recently had somebody who wrote on the forum on our website who said, you know, I just needed to get this off my chest. You know, I just needed to get it all out there and just get it all down in writing, you know? And sometimes that is all you need. It's just whether it is via using a keyboard or you know, using your own voice, just actually getting something out there and for the world to listen and the world to hear.
Yeah, one of the things I've started doing in lockdown as well is this sort of, not so much journaling, but sort of end of the day, what goals have I done? What are today's wins? What have I been grateful for? Because there's some weeks where I've sort of got to the end of the week, Sunday, thought I'd been really unproductive, procrastinated all week, and I was going to be really behind. But then you sort of sit down for that moment and write things down and just get it out in the open. Mm-hmm. And you realise, actually, I've done everything I wanted to do last week anyway. And also, I thought I was procrastinating, but I was actually just chilling out because I'd done everything. And actually, that was a really good week. And then that can then mean it doesn't transfer to next week, me thinking, oh, I'm stressed because I've got loads to do. I've just sat down, got it out in the open, and I know I'm actually in a better place. So I think that's been a huge thing to help my mental health through lockdown. Is there anything you've been doing where we can't obviously get out and see people as much that's been helping to push you on to the next day, keep you moving forward?
I think so. I'd be lying if I said, you know, the last year and the three lockdowns have been smooth sailing, because they haven't at all. I've definitely had a real roller coaster throughout all three. And I think, you know, I've tried journaling, I've sort of tried yoga, I've tried mindfulness, and they all have kind of helped for a week or two, but then I've kind of not got bored of them, but I found myself just not doing them. And, you know, I think for me, the biggest problem during kind of the lockdowns has been my exercise has gone down, and my eating habits have gone the other way and put on quite a lot of weight, which, you know, kind of led me at the start of this year in particular to be quite upset and annoyed and frustrated with the kind of person that I saw in the mirror. And I think, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I'd say, even with the gyms opening up again, just actually forcing myself to get out and about and being active has really helped. And I think, obviously, yes, with the weather getting, well, I would say getting better, but today is not great. But, you know, with the weather generally getting better, you know, I sometimes, if I don't, the last thing I want to do is go for a walk. The last thing I want to do for a walk, like, it'll get to the point where I'm like nearly in tears tying my laces, like, because I just don't want to go out. But actually forcing myself to get out and go walking and go and get some fresh air, I think has just helped hugely. You know, even if it's just taking my headphones and listening to a podcast or listening to TalkSport or music or whatever it is, just getting out and about, walking the dog, and just, yeah, really just kind of trying to get back into some kind of reasonable level of activity has really helped me. And also, so the last couple of weeks, I've been working with the former Worcester Warriors flanker, Jake Abbott, who's recently kind of become a personal trainer and kind of like a life coach. You know, speaking with him, and he's really helped me kind of address my diet and address my unhealthy habits and stuff. So it's been really good to kind of have that different perspective on what I was putting in my body and you know, how best to, you know, exercise and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's been definitely addressing my unhealthy eating habits and getting back more into some form of physical exercise has really kind of helped me. So yeah, and I think obviously having someone like Matt Jess in particular involved, who lives and breathes exercise, you know, I think has really helped as well, because sometimes just seeing him out and about on his Instagram, you know, running or just, you know, even just being, as I say, out and about, walking or just exercising or whatever, sometimes gives you that little burst of adrenaline and that kick you need to sort of get off your ass and do something yourself.
Yeah, it goes back to that role model thing, doesn't it? I had even a few mates that I wouldn't necessarily see as the guys that go to the gym or exercise, but every especially last summer, I had a few little messages every now and again going, oh, I don't suppose you could write me a little program. I've seen your videos. I just wanted to get into some bits. And just those little triggers every now and again are really great to get you back onto some sort of purpose almost. And I guess with yourself, that sort of helps you having that little drive and purpose to get yourself in shape again. And that can be a big thing that really helps if you're stuck with no real goal to achieve. It can be really difficult to find that motivation to do things.
Yeah, I think it is almost that concept of finding a purpose again, because, you know, I think I was quite quick to slip into the mindset of, oh, you know, we're going to be locked down for the next 6 weeks. I'm not going to be able to go out or do anything, so I might as well just sit down, watch TV and just grab a bag of crisps, you know, rather than, you know, actually saying, well, what can I do in terms of exercise and fitness? You know, what can I do at home? What can I? I don't know. For whatever reason, I just didn't have the motivation to do it. And I think because being somebody who is now, again, a very sociable person, and not in terms of going out drinking necessarily, but playing golf or meeting up with friends or going for a kickabout in the park or whatever, you know, sometimes stuff like that really kind of, you know, when I didn't have the options to do that, I think that really affected me more than I necessarily understood at the time. But again, even speaking back to the motivational role models, you know, another one of our ambassadors, Tom Stevenson, who recently ran 5 marathons in 5 days for Restart Rugby, you know, that in itself is an incredible achievement, you know, raising nearly, I mean, I'm sure he's probably hit it now, but when I last checked, like £29,000-£30,000 for Restart Rugby. And to see him do that just is so, I don't know, it's just so inspiring. You know, don't get me wrong, it definitely hasn't motivated me to get out of running because I hate running. But, you know, it's even motivated me to kind of, in terms of setting goals, you know, and just actually having a bit more self-belief that you can do things that maybe you not necessarily don't think you can do, but you can do, you basically anything you put your mind to, you can do it.
Yeah, I've been watching Bear Grylls' Eco Adventure recently, which is a pretty brutal challenge across Fiji, 10-day challenge, and some of the things that you've seen in that are like, yeah, just prove to yourself that you can hit this challenge and have these goals to push yourself to. The more you can hit goals, the better you're going to get, and that's going to come with a lot of failure along the way, but you've got to hit those failures to be able to actually learn from it and get stronger from it, and then you can hit that final goal. I think we need to remove this fear of failure, like we were saying earlier, with in games and training and people shouting at you. If we can remove this fear of doing that, we're going to become a much better sports people, much better people. Like you see a lot of the football coaches saying it a lot of the time, and in rugby sevens as well, that they just want people to try things rather than be worried about plays. Play what's in front of you and play what and see what works and find how that works. I think that's, if we can keep pushing ourselves to these goals, even if they're little ones all the time, we're going to get better. Like you say, getting out for that walk, even though you don't feel like it, if you can keep that going, then we're going to keep working towards that purpose.
Yeah.
I think with you, you were saying earlier as well about just getting out for the walk, I think that's been a huge, I really like the theme of Mental Health Awareness Week this year, of it being nature. It's definitely something that helped in lockdown, where we could go out for that hour of exercise, and like you say, just getting out, even if it was for a podcast and a walk, really helped keep my mind in check. And then when we got into summer, going out kayaking, doing these little things that just actually, rather than just doing it inside on an Xbox or whatever it is, just get out for a couple of hours and go kayaking with a mate, or go and sit down the beach. Because just I think it's actually almost been not proven scientifically, but a lot of studies done now, that just being in the woodlands for a couple of hours, it does so much for your physical and mental health. And rather than people just saying it, they're actually starting to prove it in studies now. So I think just get out is a great message. Get out and find that time to be in your own head and deal with the thoughts, because then you can start to discover what you want to achieve that way.
Yeah, and I definitely think what you said about making that time is so important, because I think I definitely found myself, so kind of before I started working full time for Blokes, I definitely found myself either not taking a lunch break or not making that time to actually get out and do something. But I also think not having that split between, you know, living and working in two different locations has made it very hard for people, because I think you know, I think it's a lot easier to make excuses for not going out to do things, because obviously I think if you are working in an office or something, or you're working elsewhere other than your house, you know, I think you can really kind of in your head say that, yeah, 5:30 is the cutoff and I'm going to go home, and then I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to go for a run, or I'm going to go for a cycle, or even a dog walk, you know. Whereas I think, because yes, technically, you know, the working day might still finish at 5:30. I mean, I definitely found myself being guilty of not finishing then, and kind of, you know, maybe would be finishing at 6:30, 7 o'clock. And certainly during the winter months in particular, it was pitch black. And then, you know, it was like, oh, well, I've missed a boat now. And then, you know, you look at your steps and you're only on like 400 steps, and most of them are back and forth to the fridge. So yeah, I definitely think finding the time and actually making a conscious effort to set aside time every day to do something you enjoy is really, really important. And that, whether that is playing an instrument or painting or reading or doing exercise or whatever it may be, or listening to music, or it could be anything really. But yeah, just actually making that conscious effort to think, right, at the very minimum, I have an hour every day that's my time to do stuff for me and stuff that makes me happy. I think that's really, really important. So yeah, you know, I definitely think that's a really key message as well.
Yeah, if you're not at your best, then it doesn't matter what you're doing. You're not going to do it at your best. So it doesn't matter how hard you're working. Doesn't matter how hard you're trying to do all these extra tasks. If you're not making time and doing things that make you happy, like you say, then you're just not going to put your full effort into anything else. So just giving yourself that extra hour will actually improve everything else on the other side of it, because you're finding those hobbies. And also that's where it starts to decline. It may take two years, it may take a couple of months, but if you're constantly just working yourself into the ground, not finding those things that make you happy, that's where it becomes a big issue. And that's when it then becomes a long-term thing, because you've got to get back out of it. You potentially lose the love for some things that you've always loved, and it's really hard to then get back out of that hole. So just find that time early enough, make the time for yourself, and you'll benefit from it.
Yeah, no, and I think I read an article either late last week or yesterday, and I may have got the statistics wrong, but I believe it was something like, there was a report that came out saying that every month since lockdown started, 750,000 people a week have been finding themselves like extremely overworking, and like really like working ridiculous hours, like 15 hours a day, because they think A, they need to, B, it's A, they should be, it's probably a better way to put it, and B, that it's going to, you know, it's going to make a huge difference to whatever work they're doing. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but even if I have been sitting writing something and I've hit a wall, you know, if I sit at my laptop and stay staring at the screen, I never ever get any further. But, you know, if I actually do get up and take the dog on a half an hour, 45 minute walk, and I come back, I just feel so much more refreshed. And I feel like, because I'm looking at it with a fresh pair of eyes, I can, as you said, do a better job.
Yeah, I try and keep it to sort of 3 hours maximum at the desk, and then then I want to get outside and do something just to clear the head. Especially, as you say, if like writing blogs or writing things like that, the mind just stops. It's like even at school, we were taught that you've only really got 20 minutes of attention in you anyway before you need to take a break from that individual task. So if you're sat there for hours doing the same spreadsheet, you're probably going to be sat there for hours tomorrow checking you've made it right anyway. So why not take the time off now and just get it finished with fresh eyes in the morning? Yeah, I think just finding that time is really important, isn't it? It's definitely something that's coming up. Find that time to do what you love and to do what's going to make you almost be selfish in a way. You need to make sure you're good first before you can start helping others and start doing the other things you need to do.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the pandemic has definitely highlighted this need to be selfish, and to, you know, because I think we would have had all this extra time to, as I mentioned earlier, you know, going out and seeing friends, whether that's playing golf or going for a drink or going to the cinema or whatever. But we have to actively find that time to, even if it's just making plans with ourselves, you know, because we don't have the ability to make plans to go out and do things with others. We need to you know, it's going to be me, myself, and I who's going to be my company. So, you know, I need to do something that is going to benefit me. So, yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah. I usually sort of finish all the podcasts with a number one tip, maybe something that came up last week or just something that you always try and use. That could be for athletes, players, or just general people looking to find that little bit of extra help to push them on. Just that, yeah, that number one tip that you give that can help people get onto that next step, that next level.
I think it's very important, and I know it sounds very cliche, but I think it's very important to take other people's opinions and perspectives into account, because I think ultimately it helps you learn more, it helps you look at things with a slightly different angle. And I ultimately think, you know, the more we learn, kind of, you know, the better it's going to be, both physically, mentally, emotionally. And yeah, I think, for me personally, I've spoke to people since starting Blokes and formed relationships that I wouldn't have if it hadn't been for Blokes. And I've learned so many different ways of looking at certain situations, whether that be physical health, whether that be mental health, or whether that be, you know, my own personal habits. So I think just taking the time or making the time and making the effort to learn from others is really, really important.
Yeah. Again, like we said earlier, isn't it? You can feel like you've got to be the pillar and you've got to keep doing what you know to keep yourself pushing forward. But just that accepting that one bit of advice, even if it doesn't sound like it's going to help, could be the thing that gets you two steps, three steps ahead of what you're already doing. And yeah, I really like that tip. It's something people, this sort of fixed mindset, isn't it, that people can get stuck in and think that's the way forward. But if you can look into getting that growth mindset, taking opinions on and learning from lots of different sources and lots of, like yourselves have got lots of different sports players in as your ambassadors, you can learn from all those different areas and put it together to make something that's much better as a collective.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Well, it's been really great having you on, Tom. A massive thanks for giving up your time to jump on today and talk through some of the bits that you've been looking at recently. I think it's definitely going to help a lot of young players, especially like getting that education early on rather than it just becoming something big that you have to deal later on in life. I think that'll really help people and just people in general as well, like we were saying, speaking out a bit more, finding the confidence to speak out and tell that tale and hopefully then people can find the support to get to the next bit.
Yeah, no, well, thank you very much for having me, mate. I appreciate it.
So hopefully we can we'll catch up on Friday, socially distanced, of course, at Twickenham and watch Tigers get a good victory in the European Cup to start the summer off well.
Exactly, mate.
All right, mate.
Exactly, look forward to it.
Great to have you, mate. I'll speak to you soon, bye.
Speak soon.
Thanks for jumping on to the Coach in Your Corner podcast. If you found this useful, we'll be doing these every week, so please subscribe. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Last 20 Sports Conditioning.